to number nine.
I think so.
Okay. We spoke a little bit about this at the Wildlife Committee meeting this morning. These two WACs relate to hunting equipment, so I'm going to be presenting on WACs 2241370 and 2241460. Just for the purposes of the record and the public, for muzzleloader firearms, WAC 2241460, the Fish and Wildlife Commission requested that the department look into the public's opinion, the hunting public's opinion, on changing the muzzleloader equipment rule that would allow the use of primers that are designed to be used in modern centerfire cartridges. In most cases, that's a 209 primer, which is a primer for shotgun shells. Currently, the state of Washington doesn't allow that. The department sent an email survey out to hunters that we had good email addresses for. Over 123,000 deer and elk hunters from across the state, and we reached out to all user groups, not just muzzleloaders. We received over 14,000 responses, and the majority of the responses were supportive of this change. A little surprising to us, we didn't anticipate all three user groups being in support of this proposed change, but they were. So there are a number of different ways to slice and dice these strata, but the most straightforward a couple of questions. We asked folks if they had only used one weapon type in the past 5 years to put themselves in that category and then tell us whether they were supportive, opposed, or neutral to this idea. And so the green bars are the folks that support, and you can see that both or all three, muzzleloaders, archers, and modern firearms, were in support of this idea. For those deer hunters who used this type of weapon at least once in the last 5 years, let's categorize you that way and give us an answer. And same sort of results. Folks in all three user groups in support of the change. For elk hunters, we're seeing the same pattern. If you were a respondent that this was the only type of weapon that you used in the last 5 years, all three user groups, again, were supportive of the change. And if you used that weapon at least once in the last 5 years, what was your opinion? And those folks also came in all supporting the change. We also talked to our biologists, a little bit different group of folks, different demographic, and we asked them different questions. We asked them questions that were more pertaining to their jobs. We had 14 respondents, so as you can see, the sample size isn't huge, but I'll try not to belabor you with every single question, but you can look at those in your notebooks. Do you support the use of the change of primers? Seven said no, six said yes, and one was neutral. So pretty evenly split there. We asked them if they thought the result of such a change would increase the total number of hunters. Nobody thought it would increase the total number of Washington hunters. That was about the only one they were in agreement on. We asked if the change was adopted, did they think the change would increase, decrease, or have no effect on deer and elk harvest? Nine of the respondents felt like it would increase harvest. Five felt it wouldn't have an effect. Another question, if this was adopted, would the change have a positive, negative, or neutral effect on the deer and elk populations? Five folks felt it would be negative, and nine folks felt it would be a neutral effect on the deer and elk populations. We asked them if they thought this kind of a rule change would eventually lead to the change in the timing of the muzzleloader seasons. Three folks thought it would, seven folks didn't think it would, and four just weren't sure. This one was a little more majority driven. We asked if they thought the change would result in a reduction of number of days for muzzleloader hunting, and eight of the respondents said yes, they thought it would. The others, three and three, didn't think it would. We didn't get one. We had three that were, you know, uncertain, not sure. Asking if this change would be beneficial in the long term to the hunters. Six of the folks said yes, seven of the folks said no, and one said they weren't sure, and so that was a pretty even split on that one as well. So taking all of that survey information into account, especially the public opinion part of the survey, we felt like based on commission direction and gathering up the information that we were asked to gather up, we felt that the right way to go would be to recommend the change on 209 primers. So I'll pause there for a second in case.
Yeah. So as our chair, Jay Keeney of the Wildlife Committee, mentioned, we did have a discussion about this in this morning's Wildlife Committee meeting. I think a question that was not asked of the hunter in the hunter survey was, how would you feel about this if it impacted your seasons? One of the things that I think we need to think about as we look at perhaps you could say modernizing primitive weapons is that question that was asked of the biologist, is this going to give an advantage to the users of primitive weapons who have these exceptional seasons because they're disadvantaged compared to modern firearms. The reason we were discussing this is, as Jerry has said, this is the first time in a while that we've looked at a change to our primitive weapons and a bit of sort of updating the technology. And we talked about how we need to be careful moving forward, engaging the public in this discussion. If we look at further technologic changes to primitive weapons, first of all, ask staff to keep a close eye on that question about does this create enough of advantage for muzzle loaders that their harvest rate is indeed increasing. So maybe we will have to look at season setting for muzzle loaders as a result of that. So we'll have that kind of data as we evaluate it. But we also want our hunters to be thinking about, is it more important with the primitive weapon users to see these technologic updates and perhaps lose some of that season advantage, or is the season advantage what's important in the use of the primitive weapon? So just want to put that out there. It's something that I think we as a commission need to be thinking about, and we also want to hear from the public your opinions of it as we move forward.
Well, I'll start my work this way.
This is just a question. The one of the things that I'm interested in with respect to this season advantage that muzzleloaders have is how the our surrounding states handle this. So, do you this right off the top of your head? Uh-huh. Do you know about Montana, Idaho, and Oregon?
If I understand correctly, on this particular equipment rule, I don't believe Idaho allows. Montana doesn't have a muzzleloader season, so if in Montana you're going to hunt muzzleloader, you're going to hunt during the 5-week modern firearm season. And then in Oregon, I'm going to need a little help from the crowd. I don't remember what they allow or restrict when it comes to ignition. Not restricted or not allowed? Not allowed. There you go.
Bob?
That's my understanding. Have I got that correct, everybody?
Commissioner Keough?
Yeah. Thank you, Jerry, for the presentation. I have a comment, I guess. The as far as the response or non-response rate to your questionnaire, it looks like you have 11% response rate, and which I know people that do these surveys for a living always gives folks pause. You know, you've got perhaps a self-selected group that are responding, which may call into question kind of, you know, what really the people are thinking. We obviously would want people to respond, but that's not always the case. Did you happen to look at first of all, did you do any follow-up with people, maybe random phone calls to non-respondents to try to get better participation rate? That's the first question.
No.
Okay. And then did you undertake any analysis to try to see if there were some differences among the people that responded versus the people that didn't respond? You know, age, geographic location, things of that nature.
No.
Okay.
But if I could follow.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you then, too. Does the non-response rate give you any pause in kind of basing, looks like a lot of your proposal is based on this survey?
It does give us pause. It's an excellent point. As a reminder, we had gone through our entire 3-year package public process through the course of the summer and into September. And so when the commission asked us to find out about this particular item, we had already done all of our and completed our public process for the 3-year package. And so we had to try to cobble something together to try to get some idea of opinion on this particular topic, this particular question. So, yes, it does give me pause. If we had to do it over and had the time to do it, we wouldn't have done it this way.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Dr. Nelson, for such a nice presentation. My question has to do with the last sentence there. Some felt the change would ultimately require recommendations to shorten muzzleloader seasons.
Yes.
So when we get in this is perhaps a new guy question, not somebody well-versed in all the nuances of wildlife management. When we get around to seeing the muzzleloader seasons, will they be shorter than what they would otherwise be if the staff recommendation was not to go with the 209?
No, no. What that last sentence is referring to is when we polled our biologists, the notion was, if this change is in place for a few years, are we going to see higher success rates, higher harvest, higher impact on the resource by this user group? And if so, what are we going to do about that? Well, one of the options that we do is we shorten the number of days that a user group can hunt. And so that's what that was getting at. So apologize for the confusion.
It's a forecast for the long
term. Forecast for the future. Yes. Yes. And that's not our only option. In terms of what we would or wouldn't do if we start to see changes in success rate or impacts to resource, there are other options, but that's one that we actually is a tangible thing that we can get our hands on, and the commission can get their hands on.
Commissioner Keeney.
Thank you, Jerry. And we did discuss this quite a bit. I'd like to just bring forward some of those ideas from our wildlife meeting, but it's also some of my own. And, you know, I think there's two camps on this in the hunting world, primarily in the muzzleloader world. One that wants to remain primitive, and that's an honorable path to follow. And one that likes to maybe hear their gun go boom more than not, because that's what we're really talking about. Adding the 209 primers doesn't increase the distance, doesn't increase whether you make a good shot or not, doesn't increase the range or the accuracy. It simply says, unless you keep your powder really dry and you keep everything moisture-free, the 209 allows that shot to happen most of the time, in fact, almost all of the time. And, you know, having muzzle-loaded, that's how I always felt about muzzle-loading, was it was so frustrating to take a shot with all the precautions I did, and hear that click whack instead of a boom, because you don't get many shots at elk in particular. But I'm not discounting the folks that want to hunt primitively. I'm just saying, I think I learned from the lighted nock issue when it came before a few years back, it's just a choice. You know, don't take away a choice. Don't take away an opportunity. It may bring more hunters into that fold. It may not, but it's just a choice, and not everyone has to make it. Some can choose to hunt primitively. Some, if they had the 209 option, might choose to hunt at all. They might choose to buy a license where they didn't before. All the rest of it, I think, is kind of conjecture. It's kind of what might happen, and we don't really know. I think, you know, once you went through a season with 209s in place, if that's the way we go, you'd have data to say it did or did not affect the number of take. The harvest was not or was different. If it's not, we're in great shape. People have a choice to choose which way they want to go. If it does change, then the best option would be to adjust the seasons, because as some of our commission members said at the meeting, was people will invest in this. You know, they may buy new rifles. They may buy modifications to the ones they have. And so once made, you probably need to stick with the 209 choice. But I also think that the public and from the hunting world has spoken fairly clearly that they do not oppose this, and in fact most or majority favor it. So just wanted to say that.
Mr. Grable.
I want to go back, and I'm not sure, under WAC 220-413-070, and it's hunting with the aid of aircraft, boats, or other vehicles. Were you going to address that? Am I out of order here?
As soon as this discussion was done, I was
okay. I wanted to comment on it, but I wasn't sure.
It's aircraft with 209 primers.
Yeah. Correct.
Yes.
If a muzzleloader wanted to hunt during a modern firearm season, do we permit that?
Yes.
With or without the 209 primer?
Yes. They can hunt. If they're hunting during a modern season, they can use a gun that uses 209 primers, and they can also use a scope. But if it's a muzzleloader season currently, they can't do those things.
And we are running a little behind schedule, so I'll just remind my colleagues here. Continue, Andre.
Okay. And then... As mentioned, part of this mix is WAC 220-413-070. So this is the WAC that basically talks about not being allowed to hunt using motorized vehicles, boats, aircraft. There are some specific restrictions when it comes to aircraft. But recent conversations with our enforcement program, because unmanned aircraft, drones, if you will, are becoming more and more pervasive, they felt it was a good idea to specifically call out that equipment, even though for most intents and purposes it was probably already covered under the aircraft terminology. Everybody felt like it was a good idea to specifically call out unmanned aircraft. So this is adding unmanned aircraft to that rule.
My question was, I know that there are challenges with controlling Canada geese on certain properties, golf courses, for example, private properties that have lakes, and also people that have property that is adjacent to a river that provides habitat. Drones have been proven to be very effective in terms of harassing these from property. And so under this rule, if I understand it, it would prevent the use of drones to harass geese from golf courses, lakes, adjacent rivers, that sort of thing. It's become an effective tool, and I just wanted to be clear that this rule would prohibit it or not. It's not for the purpose of hunting, and so I'd like clarification if you can provide it.
I don't think so. I think this rule is really going towards the use as hunting, not necessarily the use as hazing conflict wildlife or something to that effect. So we will circle back amongst ourselves and just double check and make sure that we're right on that. But I'm pretty sure we're correct on that. Now there is a separate conversation going on within the department about say use of unmanned aircraft on wildlife area lands, our department lands. That's a much bigger conversation that will take some while to get through, but that's specific to wildlife area lands. And okay. So I think we're okay on just being hunting on this, but we'll double check it. Okay.
There is one public comment. So your last name wasn't here, but Nathan C. Okay.
Grim.
Pardon?
Grim.
Grin?
Grim.
Grim. Okay.
Yes.
Jim. Okay. And it's 3 minutes. You'll hear, okay.
Good morning, Chairman Smith, Vice Chair Carpenter, Acting Director Store, members of the commission. My name is Nathan Grimm. I am a sportsman from Pasco, Washington. First, I'd like to thank you for coming to Eastern Washington and allowing us this interaction with you. I wasn't going to testify on this issue, but Commissioner Thorburn and some of your discussion about the 209 primer, I've been a muzzleloader deer hunter for the last 7 years. I have there's different ranges of muzzleloader equipment. There's very primitive, flintlock style. I have what's referred to as an inline, more of a modernized muzzleloader. And my experience is it goes boom every time I pull the trigger, except for the time I poured coffee down the breech and hiked in on some mule deer, and it didn't work. I wasn't very happy then, but I don't think a 209 was going to set that load off either. So specifically, if allowing 209 primers for muzzleloader equipment during primitive muzzleloader seasons would shorten my season, I would oppose it. That would be my concern. I do know that if you like to hunt with a muzzleloader and you want to use a 209 primer, you can use your muzzleloader during modern firearm season. So specifically, I would oppose changing that if in the future we have any inkling that it is going to shorten my season. As a hunter, I do share Commissioner Keeney's opinion that a muzzleloader is more about range and sights. The weapons, you know, you got to be 100 yards or in. And I don't know if any of you have tried to sneak up on a deer in this dry wild, you know, dry land within 100 yards. It's not easy. So that would be my comment. I'm a drone owner too, as well as a master hunter. I was called out to haze some mule deer out of a dryland wheat field. And that was one of my questions, was can I utilize my drone while hazing? So I think there's a little nuance around this issue. Now you take that away, and then the conflict specialist, he didn't know, so he talked to enforcement, and they said, you know, you better, just to stay within the letter of the law, if you fly your drone to haze these deer, don't hunt. But the purpose of me as a master hunter, as I'm out there to push these deer off a private wheat field, and if I can use the unmanned aircraft to locate them and then go hunt them, I'm not sure that that's something we want to make illegal. So
thank you. Anything else?
So the proposed language in the rule adds to the aircraft, including unmanned aircraft, and then it adds a new statement. It is unlawful to hunt game animals, game birds, or migratory birds on the day one has operated an unmanned aircraft. That means you wouldn't be able to do it that day, according to the proposed language in the rule.
Correct. And that would be my issue. If I'm a master hunter and I've been called out on a conflict hunt, why can't I use the drone to find the deer and go hunt them?
Okay.
Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you.
Thank
good,
you.
Good points. Thank
yes.
you for testifying.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Commission, if I could, I do think I'm learning from this conversation we could explore some language changes there to clarify. It is a WAC related specifically to hunting, but I think we can look at some language that would clarify that it only for hunting purposes and not when part of a department, you know, sponsored conflict activity. We can work with that, and I think it would be a good thing to clarify, so I appreciate the dialogue.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful. Yeah, Commissioner Greenwald.
Nathan, thank you for coming. And, you know, one of the things that occurred to me is they talk about shorter seasons, but that's based primarily on success. It means that success rates might go up. And so that's a trade-off. I mean, shorter seasons mean that more hunters were successful in the field. So that's not a bad trade-off, in my opinion. It just demonstrates, sure.
Yeah.
That's the exact trade-off I would not want to make.
Okay.
All right. That's important to hear.
So,
thank you.
You know, the primitive guys are going to become more successful. I think my point is, if you want to upgrade your equipment to modern inline that's still legal under the current rules,
you're right.
You can increase your reliability.
Good. That helps me very much, Nathan.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, your comments were spot on. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
No, I think we got it.